Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good Saturday morning. This is the Saturday before Christmas, the day we celebrate the birth of Christ. I want to welcome you all to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for this gorgeous, gorgeous Saturday, December the 18th, 2010. And thank you so much for being with us here this morning. For those of you who are tuning in for the first time and those who are tuning in through Blake, we're also over at Blake Radio, and we're also here at Blog Talk Radio. So I want to thank all of you for joining us. And to introduce myself to those who are tuning in for the first time, I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And again, I thank you so much for your support. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a wonderful, powerfully moving, inspirational book that you will be blessed, and I do mean encouraged and inspired and motivated, if after you read this story, when you add it to your book collection. And you can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, any bookstore. If you don't see it on the shelf, just ask the clerk for it, and they can order it for you, because Long Walk Up is carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And now on this so, so blessed day, I am honored to introduce you to a woman, and she has been on Off the Shelf before, and our listeners absolutely love her. And her, she supports and promotes other writers. I love that about her. In addition to spreading the word about her own books, and she also works with other artists, singers, comedians, and we'll learn more about that as we go through today's interview. And she is the founder of Pen of the Writer and organizer of the Dayton, Ohio Book Expo, and that's my hometown, Dayton, Ohio. And it's a small city, and I know what she's doing there. It's probably, maybe she's the only one doing that for the African-American community, but I know it's greatly appreciated. So she is a leader. She doesn't wait for things to happen or complain about what's not happening. She's somebody who creates and starts things to benefit others. She is also the author of the book, The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box. That's her latest work. And her works have appeared in, others of her works have appeared in anthologies like Tainted Mirror, The Midnight Clear, and Blended Families. She is online at www.penofthewriter, and it's spelled the way it sounds, penofthewriter.com. Again, penofthewriter.com. And she is the one and only Valerie Coleman. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Valerie.
Hey, Denise, thank you for having me. That is such a wonderful introduction. I'm just sitting over here gleaming like, oh, my gosh, is that me? Is that me?
You are. I'm just being from Dayton. And I know, and I was there home recently, in November, the latter part of November. Dayton is so small, and I really appreciate what you bring in. I remember when you first started the conference, and I'm thinking that's probably the only conference like that in Dayton, and probably one of the only few of any age group, any culture in the city, because it is small, and you have kept it going. And I know it takes work to keep those conferences going, because I had another friend who did a big conference in Indianapolis, and it takes work to keep them going. So I appreciate what you're doing. And I wanted to start this interview by saying congratulations on publishing your first novel, The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box, which we've got to talk about.
Thank you. I'm excited. I have to say, of the three books I published through Pen of the Writer, it is my favorite.
Oh, okay. This is your third.
This is my third book. Yeah, Blended Families and Anthology was my first.
Right.
And that one was about step families. I won several awards on that one. I think we talked about that one on the interview we had before. Yeah, that one is now, and I didn't realize this until last week, it's an Amazon top 100 bestseller in the step family category.
Go ahead.
I know, Lord, I'm like, what? I was looking for something on Amazon, and I said, wait just a minute now.
Good for you.
So, Yeah,
oh,
thank
my
you.
Goodness. That is what an awesome surprise. You're looking for something else, and then you see something good about a book that you created. Before we start discussing The Forbidden Secrets of the Goody Box, which is a novel, I know your others were anthologies, I want to talk some about, because some of our listeners did listen to the previous interview, and some, this is their first time, their first introduction to Valerie Coleman. So I want to talk about some of your short stories. If you could tell our off-the-shelf listeners what your short story, Safe in His Arms, is about. I know it was in the Midnight Clear anthology. What was Safe in His Arms about?
Safe in His Arms, okay, the Midnight Clear anthology was published by Kendra Norman Bellamy, K&B Publications, and it was the whole premise of the book was stories that focus around Christmas time, you know, inspirational type stories that focus around Christmas time. And so with Safe in His Arms, when she actually approached me about it, I was in the process of writing, compiling, and editing Blended Families, my first book. And it's supposed to be fictional stories, and because I was in the midst of doing that book and the deadlines were like almost dead on each other, I went ahead and put my story in there, but it's not Christian fiction, it's Christian for real. I just changed the name to protect the innocent. The story,
I like that, not Christian fiction, Christian for real.
I changed the name. But what the story is about basically my journey as a single mom and some of the struggles that I had, and this as a single mom, trying to garner the love of the father of my children and some of the things that I went through early on in that relationship, and then how through the process of time and just my maturity, how the situation changed, you know, things got better for me. And, you know, now I'm married, and so I bring in my husband into the storyline, but I centered it around Christmas time. So when Kendra read it, she said, I want to beat Donald up. I told you I changed the name to take the innocence. Kendra said, no one could be that awful. I said, Holly, if only you knew. I said, the half has never been told.
I think that comes from one, my belief, because I believe all humans are good, because I believe God created us all good, but that we go through experience, or whatever happens to some of us, we might get character flaws, or we live our lives based out of fear and a sense of lack, and that's what causes people to steal and become jealous and envious, because they think somebody else is taking something from me, or somebody else is going to take something to hurt me, so I'm going to hurt them first. I'm going to do this first. I'm going to do more damage to them to weaken them so that they can't hurt me. It's like if you're scared of an animal, you think, okay, let me destroy this animal or hurt it so it does. But you only want to do that because you're scared you're going to get hurt. So it comes from people being not healed, and then we can act in very ugly ways when we do that. That's why it's so important for us to love and self-express our fears so we don't take them out on other people. What is the title of your short story that's included in the Tainted Mirror anthology? What's the story in that anthology before we get to your novel, which I definitely want to talk about? What's this, a short story in Tainted Mirror, and what is it about?
Tainted Mirror, let me say this. An anthology is a collection of stories from either a lot of different people or the same author, but just short stories, just in case, you know, I've had people say, what is an anthology? So it's a collection of short stories. And with Tainted Mirror, I teach writing and publishing to inmates and high school students. And so after going through the process of teaching them about writing and then teaching them about publishing and then teaching them about marketing, they're like, okay, we have everything now. We just need you to give us a book. I'm like, what? So I published this book for them so that they can tell their story. It contains stories, of course, from the inmates and the high school students. It also contains stories from a chaplain, you know, and the chaplain's wife, actually, because the chaplain had passed, but she wrote a story based off of his diary that he had been journaling. It includes stories from people who overcame sexual abuse, verbal abuse, substance abuse, addiction, you know, any type of a drug, alcoholism, all kind of things that people have overcome and endured. Because the gist of that book is to look at those things that keep you from moving forward in life, whether it's something that someone said or someone did or our own stinking thinking that holds us hostage and it disables us from being able to walk in our purpose and walk in our destiny. Because the catchphrase on that one is, what's keeping you from your destiny? My two stories in that book, the first story, the very first story, of course, as a compiler of an anthology, I open and close with my stories. So the first story is called Vehicular Homicide, and it's a fictional account of a woman and some of her, you know, the morning rush of trying to get kids off to school and get consumed in what she's doing, and she has this car accident. Isn't that weird? I told you I just got in an accident yesterday. But,
oh, I know. Oh, my goodness.
Right. Oh, Lord. She got into a car accident, and so the majority of the story is her struggle with, because the car bounced down this ravine, so she's, you know, down there, and no one's there to help her, and she's having pains in her chest, you know, and she's like, I'm going to die. So the whole story is her struggle of coming to grips with the things that she had done and didn't do, and, Lord, you know, I should have done this, and why didn't I do that, and, you know, I can't believe, you know, I'm here now in this place, and there's so many things I left undone. So that story focuses on it, and I won't give it away. It's got a little. I like to throw a little hooks in the end of my stories.
Okay.
I'm not going to say.
Yeah, keep the readers.
Yeah,
yeah.
Keep them going.
Keep the readers,
yeah. At the end, they're like, "Oh my God!" They're like, "I had no idea." And then I close. The last story in the book is called "Where Do I Go From Here?" And it was actually my notes from a presentation that I gave to a group of graduating parents who, a lot of them didn't have GEDs, they were single parents and, you know, challenges and living off of welfare and just didn't see a future for themselves. And it was a program that my church held called Project Impact, where they, you know, they give them life skills, give them job opportunities, position them to be able to get their GED and tutor and all that stuff. And so they were having a graduation ceremony, and the bishop of the church asked me to, you know, be the keynote speaker for the graduation.
Wow.
So I created this presentation for them. And it basically just goes through, you know, okay, here's where you were. You saw, you know, where you felt there were some shortcomings, and then you were able to move beyond that. Something changed, something clicked in you, and you moved forward. So it's like my words of encouragement, where do I go from here? Okay, so this is the first step. You know, I just let them know, this is just step one. Don't stop here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of you. We're happy. We're excited. Keep going. If it's college,
yes,
go to college. If it's trade school, go to trade school. If it's to be a better parent, keep moving forward, you know. So it's just inspirational, yeah, they really love it. They got a little stand ovation at the end. I was like, okay, thank you. I'm good and nervous.
I'm listening to you, and as I listen to you, I hear like a common thing. Excuse me. I know about the work previously that you, during our previous interview where you talked about the work you've done with people who are incarcerated and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And the common theme I'm hearing is through your writings and the work that you do, even though you also are an author who I'm sure would love for people to support you, and I'm sure that many people do, but you also are somebody who, and I'm told this is a big part of what life is about, and you seem to do this. A lot of what you do actually strengthens and helps other people. Even in your writings, I can hear that keep continuing to come through. You take life experiences you've had or things you've observed, and then you go and you help others. And I definitely like where you made the comment that, okay, you graduated from college, now keep going. You're going to Alcoholics Anonymous, now keep going. Don't just stop with one thing. Keep moving forward. Just keep, because so many of us take one step and then we just stop. And like that's enough, but you're still living, so you have to keep going, keep moving forward. And then in 10 years, you'll look back, and you'll be amazed at how much ground you've covered. So I really love, but I hear that theme. You are one of the few writers. I just keep hearing that theme coming through with you. You do things that support and help others, from your conferences to the types of speeches you give, to the organizations you work with, to the themes and the stories that you write. That's it. I wanted to ask you, and then there was another question I wanted to ask you, but first I wanted to ask, what has the reader reaction been like to Tainted Mirror?
You know what? They absolutely love the book. It's a powerful book, because you see some people at their absolute lowest. You know, some of the things that some of the inmates had gone through, you know, you understand, gives you a better understanding of why they did what they did. Not everyone is a criminal, like you said earlier, just for the sake of, I got to have more. Some of them, you know, my kids can't eat. So I got to do what I got to do to make sure my kids are fed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or my mom is sick, and I don't have money to get her to the doctor. I got to do what I got to do to take care of my people. You know, and so sometimes we're thrust into these situations. We're so quick to label people, not really understanding where they've come from or what they've done, what motivated them to be the person that they are. And so there are a lot of stories in there. But the book is powerful. It's one of those stories. It's encouraging. It's inspiring. But at the same time, you're going to cry. I'm not a crier.
Okay.
Some of those stories in that book had me bawling when I saw.
Wow.
You know, you think your life is rough until you see what someone else is.
Yeah. You hear somebody
through.
Else's story. Mm-hmm.
Right. Like one of the young ladies in the book, her story is from for better, for worse, for prison. Because she ended up marrying her husband and had no idea of his shady past and ended up spending years in jail because the FBI assumed that because she was married to him, she had to be a participant in his illegal activity. She had no idea what was going on. So she served a lot of time. Of course, she lost everything in that process.
Oh, Lord.
Right. And so the things she went through in jail, you know, some of the things, you know, she's in this women's prison and some of the things she had to endure, but she used that opportunity, even through that struggle, that hardship, to minister and witness and encourage other women. You know, because everybody says, I'm innocent. What are you here for? I'm innocent. I ain't do nothing. I'm innocent. She was literally innocent.
And you know that happens, that wrongful imprisonment, that does happen, and that's what a book I wrote, Spiral, deals with. And when I was doing research for Spiral, it shocked me how often that happens. It just blew me away. Oh, my goodness, it just blew me away. I actually just read a book about a woman named Joyce. I can't think of the title of the book just now, but that's based on her real-life story, a woman who committed a crime with the exact same name she had. They both were from Texas, Joyce and Joyce Brown. And she didn't commit the crime, but she did 5 years, and she kept fighting and praying, and finally she had a good attorney who believed in her, and they got her out. But oh my goodness! But while she was in there, she did like the ministering too to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a tough road. You'd rather minister outside of prison than inside.
Right.
I wanted to ask you next, from your experiences, Valerie, would you say that getting more published for writers or off-the-shelf listeners who want to be a published author, would you say that getting more published in an anthology is a great way to start building a portfolio?
Oh, yeah, it definitely is, because you have the benefit of being a published author without all of the expense, often, you know, that comes with self-publishing. You have the camaraderie that can be developed between the other authors. Then you have multiple people who are out, you know, presenting the same book with your information in it. So it's a great way to get out there, get publishing credentials. The problem is, if the person who's compiling your book doesn't know what they're doing, you can have your name attached to some mess.
Okay.
So that can be a problem. So you have to be mindful of, you know, who the person is and what the quality of the book is going to be, you know, if they're going to actually edit it or if they're going to pay someone to edit, you know, because you want to make sure that that book represents you, that first, you know, that first initial introduction of you is a good representation of you. And definitely make sure that you put your bio in there. You know, that has to be a condition of you being a part of an anthology, that they include, even if it's just 75 words, a brief bio, but be sure to put that in there along with your website. And if you have a book coming out, you know, put that in there as well, but you have to, you know, at least have that type of presence. But yeah, that could be it's definitely a plus. It's a lot easier. I think it's more of an advantage than a disadvantage. But again, the biggest thing is research the person, make sure you know the quality of their work, so you're not attached to mess coming out the box.
Okay, I thank you for sharing that with our listeners here at Off the Shelf. And I loved how you said one of the benefits is that one of the key benefits is that when you're in an anthology, there are several authors pushing that book because they have stories in it. So that gives you even more marketing and promotion leverage, and that's that businesswoman side of you. This is a question I did not have this question down when I did the research for your interview, but this is keeps popping up in my head. So before we talk about the forbidden secrets of the goodie box, which I want to talk about after I ask you this question, we have many, many listeners from around the world here at Off the Shelf through Blog Talk and Blake Radio. And I wanted to ask, some of them might be experiencing what has gone on, you know, in the economy since 2007. Many of them might be laid off. And some people during this time of the year, Christmas, when a lot of folks are out shopping and spending money, some people just are like, they just don't have it to spend. But I wanted to, with knowing some of your history when you worked at, I think it was Delphus or
Delphi.
In Delphi and Dayton and what happened to the automotive industry, although through the bailout money they're starting to come back. But I wanted to ask you, for our listeners who might be experiencing something similar, because something keeps driving me to ask this, can you just briefly share how you went from, because a lot of people might think, well, Valerie Coleman's been writing all her life, and you might have, and earning a living as a writer all her life. But can you take the us from briefly when you started, when you were working at Delphi, to how did you transition over into being a writer and a promoter of other authors, et cetera? What was that shift like for you?
Well, when I was at Delphi, I was at Delphi for 26 years, and Delphi was a division of, offshoot of General Motors. When I first started, I was with General Motors. And so when I retired, or didn't retire, after 26 years as a senior engineer, you know, in Dayton, Ohio, as you said, the plant closed. We had 8 plants in Dayton at one time, more than that. But at 2007, we went from 8 down to like 1. And that one has been downsized considerably as far as the number of employees. So there was a major, you know, transition in the city as a whole. And at that point, I really had planned, Denise, to launch out and be a advocate for step families in African American churches, because my first book, Blended Families and Anthology, came out in 2006. Delphi released me in 2007. And so my focus was to go out there and start, you know, going into churches and being a mouthpiece for step families and teaching, you know, teaching the ministries and helping them understand what's going on and, you know, people's lives and everything. But just before I was released in June, my cousin of the Christopher group, Christopher Reed, called me and said, "Hey, you keep sending a lot of emails." I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Let me quit. Let me take you off my list." Because I'm an email. You know, I love, like you said, I my whole thing is helping people. I love to help people, because if I've been through something, there's no sense in you having to go through it too. So no sense in reinventing the wheel. I'm going to give you what I know so that you can avoid the mistakes that I made and do better. And so he was like, "Yeah, you keep sending all these emails." I said, "Okay, I'll take you off the list." He said, no, I need you to help us, the Christopher Group. We need some assistance with marketing, you know, some of the business stuff." I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." So when I got out of Delphi in June, really my whole push from there for like the next 2 years was really the Christopher Group, getting them out there, putting business practices in place, you know, establishing some things for them, doing some promotions, handling their booking, handling marketing, just doing a little bit of everything, traveling with them, you know, taking care of inventory, anything they needed to have done, that's what I did. Mm. But the transition was really, it was an easy transition. Because, I mean, it just kind of fell into my lap. I was so concerned about sitting idle that when they approached me, I was like, "Yeah, let's do it. At the same time, I launched Queen V Publishing, which is where I publish books for other people, queenvpublishing.net, V as in Valerie. .net. And what I did there was, that was also in 2007. So I was working with the Christophers and then also publishing books for other people. Right now I've done about 12 books.
And how did you go, though, for our listeners who are struggling? And I don't want to spend too much time on this, because I want definitely want to talk about the Forbidden Secrets or the Goodie Box. But you said it was easy. You went from being a senior engineer at an automotive firm to the industry was, you just completely switched industries. Were you like, when you got laid off, were you afraid? Were you like terrified that, "Oh my goodness, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? How am I going to make bringing money in?"
Right.
Or was it just that is, because a lot of our listeners might be experiencing that. I know someone who is. It sounds like you almost had it planned out before the layoff came. Was that, did you sense something coming and you started planning, or?
Oh, yeah.
We saw
it coming, you know, like 3-4 years prior. It was the hand was writing on the wall, because, you know, there's constant layoffs of people, downsizing the smaller buildings, you know, all these things were coming on. So we saw it coming. But I can't really say that I prepared specifically for what I'm doing. What happened was about 1996 or 97, I started out helping Vanessa Miller. And so that was long before there was this, you know, threat of the plant closing. And so with that, I learned a lot about the book business. And I had started having the Pen to Paper Literary Symposium in 2004. So I was already doing things in preparation, not really realizing it was preparing me for entrepreneurship.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but I was already, you know, things were already happening that were preparing me for that. So by 2004, I was starting to have conferences. I was doing workshops. I was going to other venues and teaching people the business, because what I found was a lot of authors and artists are creative. They are right-brained oriented people. They're creative. They're more flexible. They are more spontaneous, you know. But they live over there in that realm, and I'm dominantly left brain, so I'm more fact based.
Okay.
I'm more business focused. And so what I found was a lot of the artists who were creative and great at what they did couldn't master the business side. So there were a lot of things that were going undone. So I was coming on board to teach more of the business side of it, and in that process, okay, I have to, if I'm going to be effective at teaching someone to publish, I'm out of school, if I can't teach you to do what I'm telling you to do if I haven't done it myself. So I had to publish my first book, Blended Family. You know, that's like going to a marriage counselor and they don't know nothing about being married because they're not married. How you going to tell me about being married? You can't do that. That doesn't work for me, boo. I need you to go get married, go through some stuff, and then come back and tell me how to get over it. Don't tell me what to do off what the books say. I need your life experience. You know what I'm saying? So
I wanted to
publish the book so that I could give people, you know, a great understanding of what I knew because I knew it firsthand. And so I was able to apply my engineering background and also have a business master's. I was able to apply those things that I learned at Delphi and the things from my degree to the book business by helping people to understand how to print a book out and get a quality book at an affordable price. There are a lot of print-on-demands out there, but they charge, you know, exorbitant fees, you know, to get you a book, and then you can't make any money because it's too expensive.
Right.
So, like, even with Vanessa, I helped Vanessa save tens of thousands of dollars just by going out and shopping for quotes. Now I have 250 printers nationwide, worldwide, actually, who know when I submit for a bid, they know they're competing for other people.
Right.
Other people,
oh, my
so they're
goodness.
Coming in low. I'm getting prices, like, out of this world. I'm like, what?
Yeah, you win.
I mean, I have price spreads of maybe $3,000, exact same book, all the different printers. One will say $500, one will say $3,500.
Yeah, you, oh my goodness, the things you are sharing here with our listeners here at Off the Shelf, I thank you. I know our listeners appreciate it, but if you are a writer and you're looking for a printer, I recommend what Valerie said, shop around, because one printer might charge you $10,000 to print just 1,000 copies of a book. Another printer for that same 1,000, they only charge you $2,000. So if you don't do your shopping around, then you, and everybody wants you to buy from them, they're going to tell you they're the best deal in town. But you have to do your due diligence and really find what is the best deal, who's got the best customer service, et cetera, et cetera. So you get the best deal. Right. And I get the business side of you, it comes through. You're supporting of others, and your business acumen is very, very strong. So writers who work with you benefit. And I for our listeners who just tuning in, we are speaking with Valerie Coleman, and she is the organizer of Pen of the Writer in the Dayton, Ohio Book Expo. She also has works in the Forbidden, her book, The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box, which we're going to talk about next, The Tainted Mirror, The Midnight Clear, and Blended Families. And Valerie Coleman is online at penofthewriter.com, spelled the way it sounds, penofthewriter.com. And Valerie, could you give our listeners here who are interested and perhaps working with you to publish a book, the URL for the website again where you said you do your book publication work at?
It's Queen B as in Valerie, queenvpublishing.net.
queenvpublishing.net. Again, that's Queen B as in Valerie or Victory, publishing.net for our off-the-shelf listeners, queenvpublishing.net. You can go over there. I'm sure she has her guidelines if you're interested in working with her. And Valerie is very professional. I vouch for Valerie. She's as long as I've known her and have had contact with her, she's been very professional. And again, that's queenvpublishing.net, and she has a strong, strong business background. Now, we want to get to your book. As we're already halfway through the interview, it's just going by so fast. I want to talk about The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box. You've written short stories. You've published work for other authors. You're an excellent speaker. Now you're launching into the novel writing arena. When did you start writing The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box, Valerie?
Well, I officially started striking pen to paper December of last year, December 2009. But prior to that, I'll say maybe September, October, because I co-authored it with my cousin. Now, I did all the writing, but together mm-hmm. we discussed, you know, the concepts and the storyline and things that he wanted to happen. Because The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box is a book for women to help them understand those crazy creatures we call men. You know, we just love them, love them, love them, but we don't understand them. I don't mm-hmm. understand them. You know, I've been at this thing for a long time, and I'm like, I don't get it. Y'all just confused the devil out of me. But when yeah. I talked to my cousin, Christopher Reed, who was also of the Christopher Group, who's a relationship expert, he was like, you know, we're really quite simple creatures, you know, quiet as it's kept. I'm like, well, don't keep it quiet. Tell me. So, you know, we started talking about some things, and every morning when I was walking around my neighborhood, he would call on his way to work, and we would talk. Mm-hmm. So he was like, you know, I really want to write a book to help women understand men, because I see these women getting into all these trouble, because he's a counselor. You know, he counsels or he coaches women. He's like, I see mm-hmm. these women making the same mistakes. I find myself saying the same things over and over and over again. You know, he said, I really want to do a book. And at the same time, I wanted to write a book because I was like, you know, I'm midlife-ish. And I'm like, there's things going on in my mind, my body, my spirit, you know, and I want to be able to convey that to women so that they can understand, you know, right around this time there's going to be transition. You know, it's like mm-hmm. when we come to this point where we're like, who am I? What's my purpose? What am I about? What's going on? What have I done? What should I be doing? You know, mm-hmm. so I wanted to write about that. So he said, now he's a songwriter. He's not a book writer. Mm-hmm. So he said, let's write a book. I'm like, now us may not be the right pronoun, but let's go for it.
Okay.
So what we did was I started writing December of 2009, and I actually finished it in April. And I was blown away that I finished it so quickly. But what happened was I put myself on a deadline, because the Dayton Book Expo, like you mentioned before, is an event I co-founded with two friends of mine, Charlotte Brown and Latanya Branham, and it was scheduled for May the 1st. And I was okay. dedicated, committed to having the Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box for the first Dayton Book Expo. So
wow.
that's when I had to have it done in April. And uh-huh. I did. I got it done. So what is it, about 4 months? Yeah, 4 months to write it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was challenging at times, but the good part about it was that because when I had got stuck on a scene, like Chris and I, Dr. Reed, we would talk about something, and he would say, okay, well, I think in this chapter I want to see da-da-da-da-da-da. So, oh, okay. So then I would put a whole storyline, you know, around, you know, what he would wanted to see happen in a particular chapter. And when I maybe got roadblock. Look, I got rear-ended yesterday, and I got that on the brain. Writer's block. I would say, okay, Doc, okay, I got the chapter done, but now I'm not really sure what I want to happen. So we would then start, you know, talking about concepts, what he wanted to happen, or what we would work through some things. I'd be like, okay, yeah, nah, yeah. So it really helped to have that co-author, that input from him. But 4 months.
Now, he helped with the overall creation or structure of the book. I use the word structure. Did he also, like, did he have a great impact on creating any of the male characters in the book? And I think having him help you with a book that has to do with relationships, and I'm going to ask you to tell our off-the-shelf mm-hmm. listeners, just give them a sneak peek into what the Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box is about so you whet their appetite and they go get a copy. But did he help to create any other male characters, or did he just help with the overall structure, like suggesting this should happen in this chapter and so on?
I think he did help with some of the male characters. Of course, there's a character in the book who actually Doc Reed is in the book. So he comes in. He actually gives his relationship counsel to the main character, Deborah. And so, of course, his character is based off of him. And what I would do is I would go write something. He would say, Reverend, I wouldn't say that. That's not what I would say. Here's what I would say. So then I would make the changes. When it came to the male characters, for the most part, they came from me. But what I would do is I would, you know, because I'm not understanding men, I would say, I would have something happen. He said, a man wouldn't do that. Oh, what would a man do? He said, a man would do this. I said, okay. So then I would change it based on, you know, his feedback, because I definitely, you know, I'm like, I'm still figuring this thing out. So I definitely, I might know this part of writing, but I definitely don't know what how a man would respond to certain things. So
wow.
He gave his feedback on, yeah, on that type of stuff. So he really came in with the Doc Reedy character and then the male perspective. And together we developed, even the female characters, we developed more so within the concept behind, mm-hmm. You know, what we wanted to come out. Because our objective, the book is entertaining. It really is. It's a laugh out loud
yeah.
book. They're calling it the Black Sex in the City without all the sex in the city.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Our focus was to teach. So there were certain concepts we wanted the reader to pull out of there. So we discussed the concepts, and then I wrote the story around those concepts.
All right. I want to ask you about the characters. Then for our listeners, I wanted to ask you, you said Christopher told you some things about men.
Mm-hmm.
If you could just tell us some of the one to three of the key things he shared with you about men that our off-the-shelf listeners who are women could benefit
mm-hmm.
from knowing. But before we get to that, I wanted to ask you, you told us about Deborah, who's the main character in the book. Who are some of the mm-hmm. other main characters in The Forbidden Secrets of the Goody Box, and what is it about these people that will cause readers to remember them?
Well, Deborah is single, and she is in search of love. Her whole thing is, her philosophy on men had always been, if he loves sex and I give him sex, then he'll love me.
Ah, you know how many women. Oh. That is one. Valerie. It could take years. How many of us women at some
mm-hmm.
point in our life
mm-hmm.
believe that?
Right, exactly. So that's what the whole premise of Deborah's whole thing was. And so her journey is getting to the place where she has to understand that if she wants a fulfilling, committed, monogamous relationship, giving him her goodie box is not going to get her there. So one of the things that you told me you wanted me to ask, one of the things that Doc Reed helped me to understand, because really that was my philosophy on men for years. You know, when I was in college, I didn't know. I mean, not that I was out there loosey-goosey, don't get me wrong, but that was my philosophy. I thought, okay, you know, if he loves sex and I give him sex, that means he's going to love me.
Yes.
You know, I'm an engineer. Everything I do is by formulas. So that's a formula. This plus that equals that. Duh. But one of the things that of the things that Doc Reed taught me. No, that doesn't work for men. If you really want a man to love you, you know, and be committed to you, you don't give him of yourself.
Yes.
Especially not until his heart is involved. So another thing that I learned from him is that what we do is women love men. You know, if a man gets in our ears, he talks to us, it goes to our heart, we give him our goodie box. So we're
mm-hmm.
ears, heart, goodie box.
Mm-hmm.
Well, men are eyes, because men are visual eyes, and they go to their, we'll call it a goodie box for lack of a better word, then
mm-hmm.
they are sexually stimulated, and then it goes to their heart. So what we do as women, because we are emotional and we're connected to man, you know, we get all tied up into him, and we're like, okay, I love him, he loves me, what should I give him? Let me give him me, let me give him my goodie box. He's
right.
not there yet. His heart's not there yet. For him, it's strictly sexual. So we're giving him what we think he wants to love us. Because we're in love with him, that means he has to love us, and that's not the case. But for him, you know, because men can compartmentalize their emotions. They can truly love a woman and cheat on her.
Yeah.
Because they can compartmentalize how they feel. Because for them, sex is just an act. It's not emotional. For women, it's typically emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens
wow.
is after we've given him our goodie box, and he's like, okay, thank you, that was good, I was waiting on you. You know, he goes on his way, you're like, I can't start calling anymore. You never had his heart. You didn't wait till his visual and sexual attraction went to his heart. You gave it to him before his heart got involved.
And he's not
involved in you emotionally. He pulls on his way without second thought.
Wow. And you know, I have heard other men who have either written books about, because other men say they just see women suffering through this so much, and that it's so
mm-hmm.
easy. It's
mm-hmm.
so easy if women would understand this and stop. Of course, the guy's going to con you and tell you how much he'll love you, and if you love him, you
mm-hmm.
give him the sex and this, that, and the other, because the guy wants the sex. So it's like a kid wanting
mm-hmm.
candy. He's
mm-hmm.
going to tell you whatever he thinks it'll take to get
mm-hmm.
you to. But you have to, what you said, you have to realize that if you, and I've heard so many men say it, if you don't wait and let that relationship build, until that man has more invested, then sex is all there's ever going to be there. I don't care what you think's going on. It could last months. It could last years. But it's not going to get deeper than sex. And I've heard so many men say that, and they say it's so simple. But women, we let ourselves get conned by a man who says, oh, no, and I love you, and why should we wait, and this, that, and the other. If you got a good head on your shoulders, the women, this is reasonable men saying this, then you should wait. And men say if a guy is not willing to wait, then good. Now you know he's not the guy for you.
Right.
Good. Let him go.
Out of fear, women get, they're afraid. I'm afraid that if I stop, he'll leave me. Or I'm afraid that if I don't do this, I won't have anyone. But at the end of the day, you truly don't have. You still don't have anyone. You may have him physically. You don't have him emotionally. You don't have his heart. And what is that? That's empty. And that's why you're women like, we've lived together for years and he won't marry me. I've had his babies and he won't marry me. Quit having sex with him.
Yeah. Oh, Valerie, it's so amazing. We do get afraid. I'll lose this guy.
Mm-hmm.
You never had the guy.
You never had him.
You never had him. You could have sex with anybody. You never had that man.
Mm-hmm.
So you wait and let that relationship build. If the guy doesn't want to wait, let him walk. And then you'll find somebody who loves you enough who is willing to wait. Oh, my goodness. I love what you are.
It could be hurtful, but you got to wait. I mean, it's the only way to know for sure.
I love what you're sharing in the Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box. Could you tell our listeners here about 1 to 2 key conflicts in the story that will keep readers turning the pages while they read the Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box?
I think sticking with Deborah, I think the thing about Deborah, her key conflict was after she realizes, because she finally meets with Doc Reed, she's dating this one guy. Well, actually, they're living together, and she's thinking, we're going to get married. He loves me, but she finds out something differently. In chapter one is like the hook chapter of the year, I guess. But so what ends up happening is, she goes through this depression, and when she comes out of this depression, she meets another guy. And she dates him for all of a month, and she's like, okay, it's been a month, I'm doing my thing, I'm good, I'm about to do this thing, let's get it rocking. Well, of course, after they get it rocking, he's done with her. She doesn't call, she doesn't hear from him, so now she goes through this other, transformation. Okay, I have to do something differently. Then she meets Doc Reed. And he begins to tell her the things that you need to do. When he calls, don't be so quick to respond. If he asks you out on a date, don't jump on it so quickly. It's really his game playing. And like Deborah said, I'm not one for playing games. He said, either play the game or be the game, because men are hunters. You're gonna be hunted like wildlife if you don't do what I'm telling you to do. You will continue to be the wounded doe. Okay, this dude got his bow and arrow, his crossbow, his machete. His revolver, his AK-47, his machine gun, and he's loaded with bullets. He's camouflaged. He got on his fatigue. You can't see him. And you were just a wounded dog just trying to get a little fist out the water. You better listen to what I'm saying to you. And so it's funny. To me, it's funny to watch Deborah's transformation. I mean, I laugh at the book like I didn't write it. You know what I mean? Because her transformation is, because she's 35 years old, she's a professional, she's a lawyer, she's well-educated, but she just doesn't get men. So at 35 years old, she's finally trying to make a change. And so it's funny to watch her try to make this transition, because she loves men. She says in a minute, I love men. I love them, and I want me a man. She even goes as far as to say, after Dr. Reed tells her, okay, now if you want this guy, because she meets this new guy, and she really likes him, he said, if you want him, you can't have sex with him when they go on the first day. She said, can I kiss him? He said, you better not kiss him. Can I invite him in? Don't invite him in. I can't do that. So he's like, no. So she's like, well, okay, I really like this guy, so can I get with another guy so I can get this monkey off my back and then not give him some? And Doc Reed is like, what in the world?
Oh, my goodness.
That's how my girlfriends, everyone who reads it, is like, it is so real. These are the type of things, conversations that I have with my girlfriends, or these are the type of things that have happened to me. And then there's a married girl in there, Rachel. And Rachel is married, and she's going through her transition of, she's married, but she has a lot of baggage from her past, unresolved issues with the man that she truly loved, and then unresolved issues with her father, and so she's dealing with all this, and she's brought all that baggage into her marriage, and now it's causing a rift in her marriage relationship. So we watch her try to, she never gets with Doc Reed because she thinks, she's also professional. She said, I don't need his help, I got this thing. But what ends up happening is she gets emotionally connected to a man.
Okay.
And, you know, when you have that disconnect in a relationship, whether it's a marriage or a relationship in general, if there's an emotional disconnect, that leaves room for someone else to come in.
Yeah.
And tap into what you feel that you're missing. So Rachel
right.
has this void in her life from her father being absent, from the, her first love, you know, leaving her, and then, you know, this situation she's had with her husband and their marriage. And so this guy comes in, and he wins her heart.
Ah.
So now we have this married woman going through this. Now, she doesn't have any relationship with him, not any sexual relationship, but now she's in this dilemma. What do I do? You know.
How long has she been married? How long is Rachel married in the story?
Married
how long
11
has...
years. They've been married 11
wow.
years. They have three children. You know, and they, on the outside, and that's what we portray, or I portray, on the outside, they have this happy couple. They're beautiful. They're both, you know, attractive people. She has a marketing firm. She makes considerably more than her husband. So there's issues in the marriage from her, you know, because she is a go-getter, a CEO, and this big mogul type person. Her husband is there's some level of I don't want to say disrespect, but he feels somewhat intimidated because she never took on his last name. On paper she did, but she had built this industry, this empire before he came along. She's like, I branded the company, and my name is branded. I can't change that because we're married. Even though on paper she carries his last name, so they have those type of challenges. You know, when it comes to money, you know, he's intimidated because he doesn't make nearly the money she makes. You know, so you've got this internal struggle in their marriage, and then there were some situations that occurred that set her off, and so she's like so disconnected from him. She's like,
Now are Rachel and Deborah, are they friends?
They're all friends, yes. And then there's a third character who is Sherry. Sherry is in a place in her life where she had counseled with Doc Creed, like a couple of years before the book started. So
do they all know they're going to? Do they know they're going to Doc Reed, or do they not know? Does Deborah and Sherry know they're going to Doc Reed, or do they not know?
Sherry went to Doc Reed 2 years ago, and she's
okay.
this whole healed, healthy, happy person. She referred Deborah to Doc Reed.
Okay.
Yes. And Rachel, it hasn't seen Doc Reed yet, but in book number two, Rachel going to be all up in Doc Reed's face because she's just through.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. This, the more you talk about the Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box, the more interested in the story I am becoming, and I'm sure our listeners as well. You describe your story so well, but the more you keep talking about it and the characters, that's why I wanted to ask you about the characters, because one way that people become interested in stories is when they learn about characters with conflicts, things going on in their life, like Rachel, and then Deborah's got her issues with men, and Sherry, you said Sherry has received help from Doc Reed, so she sounds like, is she the character who's got it all together?
Well, she has it together. From the perspective of relationship, she's actually transitioning. Now, Sherry is me. Each character has a little piece of me. Sherry is me on my way leaving Delphi because she works at a company called The Oracle, and they're closing. So she's a side of me. But what Sherry is going through is Sherry had this awful relationship, as most of us do. We had these horrendous relationships. And she got help from Doc Reed, and now she's in a whole place. She's learning to love herself. She's learning to, you know, appreciate being alone. She's focusing on her and what things she wants to do in life, you know. And in the process, she has met a gentleman, and she's taking it very slow. They go out on dates. They, you know, very platonic dates, you know. Very little, if any, hand-holding, no kissing. You know, it's very, I need him to be my friend first.
Okay.
Friend first. And so she's been into this relationship for almost a year, and she's just developing this friendship. And so she's like this voice crying in the wilderness telling Deborah, you're doing it all wrong. I know what you need to do. Stop doing this. Stop doing that. And Deborah's like, what do you know? Just because you're happy now, you know, just because you went visiting Hitch, she called Dr. Reed Hitch. You see the movie Hitch with Will Smith. Just because you've been all up in Hitch's face, I mean, I have to go to you. You'll know everything. You know, I remember when we did drive-bys for you. We all did drive-bys.
Oh, my goodness. These three characters Oh my gosh. And if they have a very strong friendship that may get challenged from time to time, that
right.
but that it stays strong, that I think would even strengthen the Forbidden Secrets of the Goody Box. What has the reader reaction been like to the book?
The reaction has been phenomenal. Right now we have a four and a half star rating on Amazon, and because of the book is the way it is, we're getting called to do speaking engagements now and doing workshops.
Wow.
But we're now traveling the nation, yeah, conducting workshops.
Oh my goodness!
For I had one
Congratulations!
Lady,
wow!
Thank you. It's wonderful. We're getting called. I mean, churches, schools, colleges, high schools. Now we're developing a curriculum now for high schools and elementary school students because of it's the empowerment that we're giving to women and young ladies to love yourself, respect yourself, understand, you know, that men are not the enemy, but at the same time, you don't give a man all of you. Love you more.
Mm.
Than you know, and so it's been a really great journey. And the feedback, the response is always the same. I absolutely love the book. When is book number 2 coming out?
Wow.
Because we leave it on a cliffhanger. Yeah, we have,
I am so happy for you.
Thank
oh, my
you.
Goodness, the Forbidden Secrets of the Goody Box. Wow.
Yeah, I've gotten readers that said, like one lady, I was in Cleveland a few weeks ago with the Christopher Group, and a lady was a reader in Cleveland, found me on Facebook. And she's like, oh, my God, I read this book. I absolutely love it. We want to do a workshop up here in Cleveland. So she's working on a workshop there. Well, I told her, I'm going to be up there next weekend. Can you come and meet me? So she came to the venue I was at, came and met me. And we're texting each other. She's like, okay, I'm here now. So I run out and we meet. And she said, oh, my God, can you please sign my book? Can you please sign my book? Because she got it off of Amazon. So I signed it. She called her girlfriend. Guess who I'm here with? I'm here with Balcom and
wow.
Doc Lee. She pulled out
oh,
her book.
My
when
goodness.
I tell you that book was tore up. I said, what happened to the book? She said, I've read this book 3 times. She said,
wow.
Every time I go through, I'm learning something new. She's marked the pages. She got what's the thing? Post-it notes and highlighter.
Mm. Oh, my
the
goodness.
Yes.
How can our off-the-shelf listeners get a copy of The Forbidden Secrets of the Goody Box? How and where can they get a copy?
Well, if they want an autographed copy, it's available at my website, penoftherighter.com, as well as Christopher Reed, that's R-E-I-D, christopherreed.org. And if they just want to get a copy, they can also get it at Amazon. And we have ebook available now. And if they
okay.
go to smashwords.com, and then just Google Goody Box, it'll pop up, and they can get, we have the Kindle version, the Sony Reader, the Nook, and then they have just plain PDF. So there are like 7 or 8 different versions available if they want to get it in ebook form.
Okay, so ebook for our off-the-shelf listeners, Smashwords is at smashwords.com,
mm-hmm.
smashwords.com. Just put in a search for the Forbidden Secrets of the Goody Box by Valerie
mm-hmm.
Coleman at
mm-hmm.
smashwords.com, and you can get an ebook copy for any of the ebook tools like Kindle and whatnot. And then
mm-hmm.
You could also go to Christopher Reed, R-E-I-D.org to get a copy.
Mm-hmm.
Or at Valerie Coleman's website, which is penoftherighter.com. Of course, you can go to Amazon and other
mm-hmm.
booksellers and also request a copy of The Forbidden Secrets of the Goody Box. You can get it in ebook form or you can get it in paper form
mm-hmm.
either way. And there's going to be a sequel, so this is a book
mm-hmm.
you want to read so you can keep up with these characters, Rachel and Sherry Don't tell me, Deborah, Rachel, Sherry,
mm-hmm.
and Deborah, the three friends,
mm-hmm.
and Dr. Reed and his impact on these women's lives. And you come away with some tips that you can use in your own life that Valerie
mm-hmm.
shared with us here today at Off the Shelf. We only have 6 minutes left. I wanted to
wow.
talk very, very briefly about Pen of the Writer. What are some of the plans for the Pen of the Pen to Paper Literary Symposium that you have for 2011?
Well, what I did in 2010 was I did Pen to Paper as a webinar, and I think I may do Pen to Paper as a webinar every year. It's just more conducive. Usually when I do my conferences, most of the people who come aren't from Dayton. I've had people come from as far as Atlanta, Florida,
wow.
Washington, Seattle, Washington, California, New York. They're coming from everywhere but Dayton. And I'm like, you know, the cost for them is just too much. So I did it as a webinar in 2010, and I'll probably continue to do that as a webinar. So as a result now, I have DVDs available, about 8 to 10 hours of my teaching available on DVD. So that's one thing that I'm offering now. And the other thing that I do at the last weekend in March is I do the write-on workshop. And I do that in Dayton. So I'll probably continue to do that one as a, you know, place for people to come to and do the pen to paper online at as a webinar. What else I'm doing? I'm still focusing on publishing books. Matter of fact, just before I got on the interview with you, I had a lady from Louisville, Kentucky call me and say she was referred by someone who is, she just got her doctorate degree in Christian theology, and so she wants to publish her dissertation. So I'm going to do more publishing through Queen V, which is, of course, a division of Pen of the Writer. But I think my main focus is going to be the Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box, really getting it out there, getting venue to go in and do workshops. You know, we're doing two-hour workshops, full-day workshops.
Mm.
We're going to work on the audio book, and we're also talking about possibly doing a stage production. Mother Love,
wow.
The Mother Love Show.
Oh,
yeah, Mother
my
Love,
goodness.
Mother Love called me. I did an interview with her a couple weeks ago, and she wants the rights to the movie for the Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box. But she said, I know there's going to be a movie out of this one. I said, okay, well, we have to talk about this now. I said, if you got something going, let's talk.
Okay. Oh, Valerie, I'm so excited. I'm so glad that you came on today, as we only have 4 minutes left. I'm listening to you, and I'm so excited for you. You are definitely, and I could tell from the start, and you like you said, keep moving forward. Not only continue to do the same thing over and over and over. So you say you published a book, or you just had a short story put in an anthology. I'm speaking to our off-the-shelf listeners. And then to continue to move forward, you say, okay, now I'm going to go from a short story to I'm going to put out a full-length novel, like The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box. And then you also do workshops. So you say, now I'm going to get me some speaking engagements. And then you say, I'm going to either start my own radio show or do radio, and then I'm going to get a newsletter out. And then I'm going to – and you just keep moving forward. And then that's how – when we look at people who we admire and we look up to what they have achieved, their achievements, and accomplishments, they just kept moving forward. Because I don't know anybody who started where they finished. They
right.
had to keep moving forward until they reached a certain level. And I see you doing that, and I'm very excited for you. Before the show ends, with only 3 minutes left, could you tell our listeners about some of the artists? You did mention Christopher, that you that you you helped to promote. And are you taking on new acts?
I'm not taking on any new ones right now, though I get calls all the time, just because I'm going to focus on the book, The Forbidden Secret of the Goodie Box. But I work with Christopher Entertainment Group, and most of my artists are gospel. I worked with Tanya Baker, the Hebrew Children. I've done some work with Jonathan Dunn, who did some stuff on Marvin Zapp's project.
Okay.
I've done some things with, New Harvest, Charles Wolfert. He was in a couple stage productions and a gospel artist. And then I also do some things with praise dancers, Christian comedians. Mark Gregory, who is the nephew of the legendary comedian and activist Dick Gregory. And mime, just a little bit of everything. I even done some things with my pastor, getting him some, you know, exposure and some stuff out there. I will be working with another stage production next year, Pleading My Case, to help them get some marketing and promotion going on and kind of handling the business side for them. And then my son, Elmar, L-M-A-R-R.com, he's a hip-hop artist, but he's right now he's moving into writing. So he moved to Atlanta in 2008, and he's doing some writing for some A-list artists right now. So I'm doing some things to help him.
We got to have you back, Valerie. I had about 20 more questions I wanted to ask you, and I just did not get to them. But I do want to ask before we close, with only 2 minutes left, how can people contact you if they want you to speak at schools, writers' conference seminars, workshops, book clubs? How can they reach out to you to schedule you for a speaking engagement?
The best way I would say is either go through my website, the contact us page on my website, penofthewriter.com. My email is info@penofthewriter.com. But if they use the email, be sure to put POWER, P-O-W-E-R, which is my acronym for Pen of the Writer, POWER in the subject line, because I get so many emails in my spam box. And then lastly, my phone number, which is 937-307-0760. 0. And I would say my phone is probably the best way to reach me. Or Facebook. I'm on Facebook. Everything I do is Pen of the Writer. So Facebook, Pen of the Writer, Blog Talk, Pen of the Writer, Twitter, Pen of the Writer.
Wow. Valerie is, oh, my goodness, from the last time we spoke to now, she has done so much within just the space of a year. I got to tell you, she is really a phenomenal, phenomenal woman, and we thank you for being here with us today. Again, this is Valerie Coleman. Her latest book is The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box. She also has anthologies out, and that's the Midnight Clear, The Tainted Mirror, and Blended Families. Blended Families deals with, you know, when two people are either entering their second marriage and then they're combining their families. And she has a personal experience in that. So she's not only coming from something she's read in books, but she's lived through and experienced and made to work. So, again, her latest book, her latest effort, The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box. She also puts out the Pen to Paper Literary Symposium, which is going to be in a webinar, and she does a writer's conference in Dayton, Ohio once a year. She's just a woman on the go, a woman on the move. She's online at penofthewriter.com. Penofthewriter.com. Go out and get a copy of The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box. You are, particularly, I would say to women, you're definitely going to learn things that can keep you from a lot of heartache and trouble and trial and error, and help you to enjoy enriching relationships right off the start without putting in years of crying and heartache. So thank you so much. Thank you so much to Valerie, and thank you to our listeners here at Off the Shelf. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. I wish you all so, so much, so many blessings and goodness and love and joy. Go enjoy your family and your friends and your loved ones, and love everybody you meet, everybody you meet. And remember that you are so valued, so truly blessed, and so incredibly loved. Thank you again to Valerie Coleman. Please go get a copy of The Forbidden Secrets of the Goodie Box and support her at penofthewriter.com. Happy holidays, Valerie. I'll shoot you an email. Bye for now.
Happy holidays to you, Denise. Thanks. Bye-bye.